Welcome to the Specialty Coffee Podcast by Storyline Coffee Roasters. We have a very special guest on today, Andrea Allen, who is the founder and co-owner of Onyx Coffee Labs. She is the 2021 World Barista Championship runner-up, as well as the 2020 U.S. World Champion. She also owns what I consider to be one of the best specialty coffee roasters in the United States. She has a wealth of knowledge. So, Andrea, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today.
Hey, Tyler. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolutely. So how did you and your husband start Onyx Coffee Labs, and what was kind of that founding story like for you guys?
Yeah, so we had both been working in coffee in Northwest Arkansas. I had been in since 2002 and had been like the general manager of a couple of shops here. And John and I had actually purchased a couple of those shops from the previous owners in 2009. So we already like in the coffee business. John bought a roaster in 2010 and kind of started roasting. And really in that time frame, I'll just say it, we knew nothing about coffee. Even though I had been in it for years, I knew how to make drinks and work a line and make a schedule and stuff like that. But we really didn't know a ton about coffee. And so when John started roasting, he really started to learn so much about the supply chain and the potential of green coffee, and then how that like feeds into the potential for roasted coffee. And we just started learning a ton. And so we decided, wow, hey, we want to make a new brand, kind of like put this idea out there that we're going to source, roast, and brew the world's greatest coffee. And so it's kind of how Onyx was founded in 2012. Wow. Which is such a funny thing. Even then when I would say, this is the world's greatest coffee, it felt really weird. And it actually still feels weird to say that. But that's what our goal is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, truly, I think you guys have, I mean, for the United States, I think you've accomplished that goal. I mean, you guys are always the front runners for the best roasted coffee and the sourcing of it. And I think you guys are truly pushing specialty coffee for the United States. And so how have you guys managed to source such high quality coffee through producers and farmers? How has that kind of relationships look like? I know you've been to Origin and things like that. So sure. Tell us a little bit about how you've managed to gain those relationships.
Yeah, so it really starts in 2011, 2012, when John was learning how to roast. Especially at the time, there was really little access to information in terms of how to buy coffee, how to roast coffee. He went and studied at Diedrich for a little bit, just learning their roasters and things like that. But really, there was not a lot of information out there. So basically, John just booked a trip to Central America, just started traveling around, meeting people, cupping, trying to buy coffees. And so that's kind of a little bit about how we got started building what we call now relationship coffee. And so as John traveled and met people and started to really learn about cupping and contracting and things like that, we really just started to learn a lot, partially being just that we really wanted to bring in a high level of coffee, a highly scoring coffees that hit that sweet and clean profile. But we also found that it was really hard to find higher scoring coffees that were actually higher scoring coffees. So I think that we were experiencing a lot of cupping of samples from people, both roasters or both producers and importers and exporters alike, that seemed like they were going to be high quality coffee, but weren't quite as good as we wanted them to be. So really over the years, we've sort of just created some pretty like hard standards that we have in terms of buying coffee. So we only purchase coffees that score 86 and above on the cupping form. And that's like scored by us. And then the other part of it is that we only sell coffees that sell roasted coffees that meet our standards. So in that way, we cup every single batch of coffee that we roast every day, and it has to hit our quality control measures. And if for some reason a batch of coffee doesn't meet it, or if a coffee starts to show age, for example, or drops moisture in the grain or something like that that's really going to affect it, we actually don't sell it. So we pull it. from the lineup. And part of that goal is that we want to develop trust with our customers that every single time they buy a box of really, really good. So anything that starts to interfere with quality, we just pull, which is a pretty big investment in terms of just like sometimes we have coffees that just don't last or don't age well, or when they arrive, they're not as good as we thought. And we basically just take a loss on that, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
How do you guys manage the quality? I mean, I imagine you guys have to be roasting a very large quantity of coffee every day. How do you guys manage cupping that quantity of coffee to maintain the quality that you guys are getting at? Like, what does that look like logistically with staff and that kind of side of things?
How we're doing quality control these days is basically we have 5 people on our team that are trained to roast coffee, and they basically rotate doing quality control for half of the day. So for a half of the day, they just like take all of those samples and they cup, they make notes, they upload everything to our like database. And then the other people are, they're not all roasting at the same time, but the other people will be potentially doing sample roasting or doing roasting assisting, which at Onyx just means weighing out batches and moving green around. And so there's just sort of this rotation. So all of the roasters get time in the QC. And so they get to like really have that experience of tasting either what they or others have roasted. But it's a pretty big commitment just in terms of the time it takes to cup through all the samples, from the batches. But then we also do quite a bit of like sampling of coffees we're looking at pre-purchase samples, all that kind of stuff. It's like cupping happening all the time. But yeah, as you know, it's super important because you have to make sure that everything hits what you're hoping for it to taste like.
Yeah, I think it's such a push and pull in the industry, because on one hand, the producers and importers, their job and their livelihoods is to sell coffee. And so they obviously want to sell the best coffees. And I think sometimes that skews cupping scores to where, you know, you get an 87 or an 88 cupped, you know, scored coffee. Mm-hmm. And then when you actually get it to sample roast it, it's not to the quality that you would expect for that level of a cupping score. And so I think it's a difficult side of the industry, but it's cool to see that you guys have your own quality standards on the importing side. And I think that was one of my biggest questions when wanting to talk to you is, how do you guys maintain such a high level of quality on such a mass production? Because you guys are in so many places. How many coffee shops and places do you think you guys sell your coffee to? Do you have an idea?
Probably like we regularly sell to like cafes and places like that, grocery stores. We probably have around 300-ish like accounts that regularly order from us. Okay. So yeah, and then we do we also do like we have an e-commerce website and we sell coffee directly to customers. So that's a pretty good portion of our business too. But it's super challenging, and I think part of it, you kind of asked me about managing those relationships earlier, and I don't think I really answered that question, but part of it is we have been buying from some sets of producers since the beginning. So in that way, we kind of have really developed a pretty good relationship with them in terms of just like, if they have something that they think will meet what we're looking for, they'll earmark it and send it to us, which is great. And so basically about 70% of the coffees that we bring in is what we call relationship coffee, which is just our term to talk about how we buy from them and what that looks like. Basically what it means is we regularly travel to where they're producing coffee. We taste coffee at the farm level and samples at their lab. And then that we contract that coffee directly with and pay money directly to the producer. So most of our coffees are that. And then the rest of the coffees are things that we buy spot or that other like importers or exporters bring in, that we either buy and have them bring in, you know, something like that. But we can't go everywhere all the time. But we try to go to those places that we regularly buy from, like as much as possible.
That's awesome. When you guys were, or when your husband was first starting and kind of just took a trip to Central America, How did you guys logistically work out all the details to bring in coffee directly from origin or from the producer? Because I know, like, you know, you've got importing and all of those kind of logistics. How did you guys, I mean, I imagine now it's fairly streamlined for you because you've built those relationships. But for someone who may want to start a kind of direct relationship or with a producer, how does that, like, what does that look like and how does that work?
So it took several years for us to really even be able to do that. I don't actually remember the first year that we did it. It may have been like 2017 or something like that, that we actually brought it in ourselves. I'm a big fan of letting people that are good at what they do, do it. So, you know, I do think one of the big pluses is that, a lot of importing and exporting folks have kind of realized the like value of and the desire for those relationships. So there's a lot of those folks that will actually take you to meet producers, and you can, when you're on a smaller scale and you, you know, have someone helping you get around the country, first of all, making introductions, and then you can like cup and actually buy on the more on the farm level and then have the companies bring the coffee in for you. So a lot of our relationship coffees are actually brought in by some of the major importers. So we basically, we pay money directly to the farmer, but then we hire those people for, you know, some fee per pound, and then they do the logistics and bring it to the States, and then we bring it here to Arkansas.
No,
but there are some that we, there are some producers that we bring it in ourselves, and then we also like hire, we'll periodically like contract with a broker or something like that to help us bring it in. But it's a big, I mean, it's a big endeavor, and it can get stuck in the port. I mean, there's a lot going on. So my, what I usually encourage people to do is just like leverage those relationships you have with importers and exporters to help you bring in or help you find what you're looking for. Cause it's definitely something that a lot of them do this way.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It makes a ton of sense. Cause it seems like such a daunting task for, I think, a lot of people that are starting out in the industry of like, man, I want to get to the point where I'm personally, I guess, putting money and paying the producers for their hard work and for their, you know, high quality coffees. But like, how do you actually logistically make that all happen? So it makes a ton of sense, knowing that, like, you know, just leverage the relationships that you have. And on the kind of flipping the scale on the like retail side of things, how many shops do you guys own? And then how have you managed kind of quality control on like your cafe side and hospitality and things like that within your team?
Yeah. Another large endeavor.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. So we have four Onyx cafes. They're all located in Northwest Arkansas. And then we have a restaurant cafe wine bar, which is actually where I'm at right now, called Pale Fellow Well Met. So we have, we technically have five locations total. And as far as maintaining QC internally, I mean, it's just always a work in progress. I mean, I have to like give a lot of credit to our team. I mean, first of all, we just have a lot of really great baristas on the team. And honestly, most of our, all of our barista staff are really committed to making really great coffees. I mean, I think one of the big things for me is just creating a mentality of asking people to come on board with excellence. Excellence is one of our like core values. And I just think that especially in this day and age, not to sound like an old person, but I feel like it's rare that you're actually part of something that's truly excellent. And so for me, I'm like try to help our team connect with that mentality. Whether they're like a part-time barista in school, they're going to be here for 6 months, 8 months, a year and a half, and then they're going to go on, or whether it's a career coffee professional, just that we're actually trying to create something that's really, really good. And then as far as like actual training goes, we put a lot of effort and time and investment into training our team. So we have like a set of initial classes, that five different classes that our team take when they first come on board. And that looks like, how does coffee go from being a seed to being a beverage? What is our approach to that? What's our approach to hospitality? I mean, we try to like really gonna get them like inundated in the industry super quickly, But then oftentimes our team will work in the cafe for 4, 5, 6 months before they actually get trained on the espresso machine. And the goal of that is just that, like, all of our shops are segmented on the schedule by, like, position, and that position corresponds with training and skill. And so by the time they get to learning pour overs or they get to espresso, that's all they're learning. They're not learning the menu. They're not learning, like, how to serve customers. And we also do all of that barista training in our training facility. So we don't really do any of it in the shop. We take our team out, put them in a different environment where they're just focusing on that. And then we bring them back and do 2 to 4, 4 to 6 hour follow-ups with them before they're technically, like, you know, allowed to make drinks. But part of that is, like you said, just about getting everyone calibrated, getting everyone on the same level in terms of skill and quality, because, you know, especially, well, in the cafe and in the roasted coffee side, I mean, your customers need to feel like their investment that they're making into the business, which is the time and money, is being reciprocated by really high quality every single time. So, you know, to really cultivate that trust, you have to create standards across the board and then train people up to it, and then also hold people accountable to it.
Yeah. No, that was actually going to be my next question is, have you guys, like, hired amazing staff? Because I know a lot of your baristas and, like, Morgan and things like that, I mean, they've not only competed, but they, you know, are a well-known name within the industry. And so, like, was that something you guys sought after, or have you essentially, and I think you answered this, but, like, essentially your training and routine and just the amount that you invest into your employees has kind of brought them to that point to where then they can continue furthering that education themselves and continue kind of pushing the bounds of what excellence is. So it's an amazing testament.
Thanks.
What
yeah,
do you,
it's really great.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So with that, you guys have 5 shops. You guys have an amazing training program, a huge quality control program. Do you guys encourage your baristas and things kind of to get into competitions, or is that something that they kind of come to you and say, like, hey, I'm interested in doing this or kind of stepping into those things? How do you guys kind of foster that environment within your shops?
It's a really complicated question because I both encourage it, but then I also, like, want them to come to me. I think that competition is such a funny, fun, amazing, really fun space where it's just really, really hard to do well in a competition. So internally, it's like I'm always interested in basically talking to anyone on the team that's interested in competition. But then I'm also kind of like, hey, just so you know, if you end up wanting to do this, I have really high expectations. So you need to be prepared to meet those expectations. And surprise, the expectation is not that the person wins.
Yeah, of course.
But the expectation is that the person puts in the work in order to represent themselves and the producer of the coffee, and then the company as a whole on a really high level. So, you know, that follows like training schedules, you know, certain kinds of like performance metrics, just meaning like that they deliver their, you know, presentation well in the time perimeter and, you know, have practiced enough to feel comfortable as possible in a high pressure situation. So I have all kinds of little like metrics that I like show to people. And I'm like, hey, if you think you can put in the time and energy and effort to do these things, like, we'll keep going. But if not, it's better to just wait. So, yeah.
Awesome. As someone who has competed on a high level and has, I mean, it's, you know, to be a runner up in the World Barista Championships, incredibly impressive, and to win the U.S. Barista Championships, awesome. Is that something that you kind of help foster and give them the space within Onyx for training and for like pointers and things like that? Or, what does that kind of space look like? Are you kind of hands-on with them on like training and expertise with that? Or is that something that, is done elsewhere?
Yeah, Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, I'm like at this point, I'm not competing right now. So I'm basically kind of the liaison between anybody on the team competing and like what we're doing and what the training looks like and stuff like that. So I like help facilitate that. But I would be a myth to take any credit for anything that that someone that's not me has done in the space, because anybody that, you know, anybody that has done well from our team has done so because of their own skill, talent, you know, I give lots of direction and I'll, you know, read scripts and give suggestions. And my husband, John, helps with coffees and taste notes and, you know, our green buyer and head of director of coffee, Dakota Graf, helps on the coffee. So, I mean, it's just like a whole team working to do it. So, but yeah, I mean, I think we definitely try to help give as much of that expertise as is possible, because there definitely are, I don't want to say tricks in it, but there's definitely things that you just don't know if you've never done it that you can fall into that can make you not score well. And so there's a whole like learning curve there. So we try that learning curve by giving people all the information that they need. And then just like helping cultivate what they're doing. I mean, anytime you're working on a project like that, it's showing it to other people is like kind of the way to work out anything that needs improvement and also like affirm all the things that are going good. So it's a pretty collaborative process. It's really fun.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. What tips or kind of advice would you give to someone who wants to compete at that level of the World Barista Championship or the U.S. Championships? What kind of advice or expertise from someone who has competed and also helped kind of train people, what things would you kind of tell them as to like, hey, here's some things that I've learned through my process and some maybe things to avoid?
I'd say the number one thing is just to learn what it's all about. I mean, I know that seems really straightforward, but I myself, the first year I went, I didn't know anything about it. And I just signed up and went. It's like, oh, how hard can it be? I mean, and it's like, actually, I just like got next to last. So apparently I didn't know anything, right? And so I think even though like the competition space has been out there for quite some time, I think still people are kind of going into that entry level of it, not, in my opinion, not totally knowing what they're signing up for. And so I just encourage people to go and volunteer at one of the competitions, either like backstage, on the stage, or as a judge, or, you know, something like that, because you just learn a ton by watching a bunch of people do it, by just being around and getting to know people. So I think the number one thing is just to learn about the competition before you get into it. And then once you get into it, I think my two pieces of advice are kind of the same. The first piece of advice is to learn the rules. And then the second piece of advice is to learn how to break the rules.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean by learn how to break the rules? Like what... Are you just meaning like pushing the bounds of what is like possible and what you can get away with, I guess? Okay.
It's not about getting away with stuff. It's more about innovation. So innovation exists between the like lines of things. So, you know, I don't know how many pages the rules are, but the rule book is pretty big. So you read through that and you think like, oh, there's only certain things I can do. Well, I look at it more as like, okay, great. That's the foundation upon which we're going to like do something really cool and new and fun. Every year that I have done well, there's been elements of what I'm doing that are not necessarily breaking the rules, but I'll show it to people beforehand and they're like, I don't know if you can do that or not. And I'm like, well, I don't know either, but it's not in the rules, so I'm going to do it. And it usually pays off. And I'm not talking about super crazy stuff. I'm just talking about like things like ingredients, styles of coffee. I've done things like play recordings of producers. You know, I've touched people that freaked everyone out. but I touched people like multiple times. I mean, you know, just doing things that I'm like, I haven't ever seen this done before. It's not in the rules that you can or can't do it. So it's like, I'm just going to go for it. And, you know, I think that really like innovation shows itself in that way. And that competition that I'm in, the barista competition and the brewing competition for sure, they're all about innovation. I mean, that's really the place that you see trends coming out of. So the EK43 as a espresso grinder came out of out of the world-based transitions. Cascara came out of it. Natural and like geisha style variety coffees came out of it. I mean, it's just like whatever does really well on that stage then like kind of filters down throughout the rest of the industry over the coming years. And so that's really the place that our industry looks for innovation. Mm-hmm. And that creates a thought process of like, that's where innovation, that's where judges are looking for innovation. And they're like looking for, to be wowed, and they really want to have a new experience. And so, but learning the rules is all about, is the underlining foundation of that whole thing. Cause if you have something really amazing and you break the rules, like you won't make it very far because you can't score well. So,
right. No, yeah, that's, I think that's great advice. I completely agree with, like, there's been so many, you know, like brewing equipment and different, you know, coffees, and like Hasakara, like, you know, found a really big space in specialty coffee after the fact.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I love to always love watching competitions because you get to see kind of, it's almost like a sneak peek into where the specialty coffee industry is headed and what kind of bounds we're going to be pushing in the coming years. So on the sourcing side of coffees within competitions, how do you guys in Onyx go about sourcing a coffee or selecting a coffee for competition?
Yeah. That's a great question. I actually just have had a couple other people ask me about this recently. Really, currently what we do is we look across all the folks that we work with already, and we try to get samples of, or we'll like buy small amounts of what they say their best quality coffees are. And then we basically just put them on the table and cup them, and whichever ones are the best is basically what we choose. I think sometimes it can be really hard because when you're preparing for a competition, you usually start way before you have the coffee. I mean, just the way that especially in the U.S., the way that the schedules work, like the finals is in April. It's just like having a fresh coffee in April. It basically puts you in Colombia, you know,
right.
Or maybe like really early arrival Ethiopia coffees. But even in that realm, it's like you don't actually get those coffees until like March. So you really don't know exactly what you're going to be using. So I think sometimes, and this happened to me as well, I'll get really connected to producer or story or something that I'm like super inspired by. And then we'll get the coffee and we'll cup it. And we're just like, first of all, one, they're always amazing coffees, but then we'll be like, actually on the table, two other coffees are like outshining this coffee. We can't ignore those other two coffees. So sometimes it will look like someone just changes coffees. Our head trainer, Alika, who has placed second and third in the World Brewers competition in the last couple of years. In 2021, he had this whole presentation built around a particular coffee, and he went to Origin, selected it, and like all this sort of stuff. And when it arrived, it was a great coffee, but it was not showing up on the table in the way we thought it needed to in order to really score points. And he switched coffees 2 weeks before Worlds.
Wow.
Because there was something else. It was a completely different producer. I think it paid off for him. He did really well, but you know, it's really tricky in that way, just the way that those seasons work. And then also what you can get access to. I mean, I've had competitions in years past that I've had this idea and I've had a coffee that I want to use, and then it just doesn't arise in time, and you have to switch coffees at the last minute, and that's really crazy.
Yeah. And I can only imagine, because there is so much, I mean, having never competed before, but just watching, I imagine that there's such a huge amount of time investment that goes into your performance, into selecting the coffees and brewing with the coffees and selecting ingredients that relate to that coffee, that if you're then switching almost everything last minute, you know, and you only get so much time with that specific coffee, it's got to be so challenging to dial everything in such a short period of time. And you know, there's a lot weighing on your shoulders just with the amount of time investment that you've put into this performance that you know, is viewed. So it's tricky.
It's both. I want to say one more thing about that, because it's both the time you have with the coffee, but it's also like the amount of coffee that you have. But these coffees that are on that on the level of performing in the finals at a World Barista Competition are, one, expensive, and two, rare. Like, there's just not very many of them. So I think sometimes there's this, like, thought of, like, oh, people on that level, like, they get to just play with these coffees for months until they figure it out. And I'm like, I sometimes pace my competition coffee 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, like, pull 3 shots with it, you know? And it's just, like, both at the U.S. finals that I was able to win in 2020 and in the world finals, I use the last dose of coffee on the stage in the final.
Wow.
That was it.
Yeah.
That's all she wrote. It was like, hey, good luck. Also, don't screw it up, because if you need to re-pull a shot on the stage, you can't. And it's like, great. That's just all there is. If they're rare, there's just not very many of them. And that's one of the reasons that they are so expensive. And so it's just like the level of expertise you have to have in like brewing them and then tasting them in these like really like confined kind of segments is kind of wild. And that's one of the reasons that having a team around you is super important, because, you know, you need like a group of people helping you taste and helping you like build flavor notes and just helping you, giving advice about dialing in so that you like aren't in this weird like vacuum where you're like, oh my gosh, I only have 3 shots. How am I going to get it dialed in? It's like having a group of people around you that know coffee and they know how to give advice and stuff is really helpful.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no pressure. That's only the last dose ever. You know, I can only imagine.
Literally. Yeah, so at the finals of the U.S. competition in 2020, I had like a dose, like a vial, you know, like a little container thing, and it like got knocked over. Just, I think probably by me, honestly. I'm really clumsy, which is hilarious.
Especially at that level.
Yeah. It's just like, I have to practice a ton because I'm like an elephant triathlon, basically. But yeah, you know, I knocked it over and it went everywhere. And we crawled around on the floor of the convention center to find every single bean, because that was the last one. It was just like, great. Well, we either find it or you don't go on. And so, like, bean by bean, and cleaning them and like, just, you know, silly stuff.
Yeah,
that's like the back
behind the scenes. Yeah.
Wild, so.
No, but yeah. You know, that's what like I love to be able to speak to competitors about, is because like you hear those kind of stories, right? Like, I have one vial left of this that's going to be done on the final, and it goes on the floor. Like, what do you do?
Yep.
You know, and so you know,
you crawl around, yeah, on your hands exactly. and knees. That's what you do.
Yeah, and you stop everything and find every bean. No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What you kind of mentioned earlier about like having really deep connections with producers or a coffee or a story. What are some coffees that maybe Onyx is about to bring on or is already on that you have kind of that deep connection with the producer and with the coffees that they're doing? What are some of those like coffees that pop into your head that you have kind of a deep connection to?
Yeah, I have a couple right off the bat that I have really deep connections to. So the first is Rigoberta Herrera from the Cafe Granja La Esperanza in Colombia. And that's the coffee that, or that's the producer whose coffees I have competed with almost exclusively throughout my career. I mean, I definitely use coffees from La Palma, coffees from the Immaculata Farm in Colombia as well. But the Cafe Granja La Esperanza is like the closest to my heart. It was one of the first farms that John was able to visit. And he had just heard it was a really great, I mean, they have a whole network of farms, but you know, he had just heard it was really great. And he went there and their hospitality is amazing. I've actually never been there, which is actually a straight up shame, but, he planted a coffee tree on their farm in 2013. Our very first competition quality coffee came from there, and it was a geisha from the Serra Azul farm they had in 2015. And we had, I don't even know, 5 kilos of it or something silly, a small amount of it.
Yeah.
And we were hustling for every little crumb we could get in the industry. And we were able to like convince Charles Babinski to use it at the U.S. Barista competition. And so we roasted 2 pounds of it and sent it out as a sample, which like just at the time, I mean, it was just insane to roast it and send that out for free. You know, we were like, oh my gosh, We're like, we really hope he chooses it. Well, he did. And then he's like, I need 2 more pounds for the U.S. competition. And we were like, okay.
Yeah.
So we roasted basically the rest of what we had and sent it out to him. But we kept one shot back, like 22 grams or something. And I like cleaned out. We didn't even have a single disc grinder at the time. I cleaned out our Melcona K30 or whatever we had. And I threw that in there and I pulled one shot. And it was just like the greatest coffee I've ever had. Like, it was so good. And I just remember feeling so proud. I was like, I cannot believe that this is that we roasted this coffee. I can't believe that they sold it to us to start with. And now it's going on to the U.S. Barista Competition. And so I'm super close to that. You know, producing family, and those coffees are amazing. I use that coffee, one of the Sarah's Old Geisha, actually, in the World Barista Competition finals. I just really feel really fond of them. And then the other place that I feel so close to is the Finca Immaculata, which is the farm that produces the Eugene Wadey's coffee. And those people are incredible. I actually have been down to see that farm, which was really a really amazing experience. And their whole team is just incredible. And the things that they're doing with their coffees are just inspiring. The way they treat them, the way they dry them, just all the intentionality that goes into it. And the Eugene Wadey's plant and the plants that they have. I mean, they just produce such a small amount of coffee. It's just wild. And to see the love that they're putting into to doing that is remarkable. So yeah, those couple places I can keep going, but the folks at La Palma and El Tucan in Colombia, longtime friends of ours. I actually was able to go to their very first cupping ever when they were at Expo. I think it was like 2014 or something like that. And I remember I was so excited. I got to go. I was pregnant and I was just, I was largely pregnant in 2014 at the Expo show. And I just remember being like, oh my gosh, I really hope I'm welcome in this cupping lab. And I went into the room and Elisa, who is one of the owners of the Palma and El Tucan, was in there running cupping. And I was like, dope. I was like, there's another woman in here. And I got to taste some of their coffees and it was just like incredible. So, and I've been down and visited them a few times and I consider Felipe and Elisa and then Sebastian on that team as well, really, really dear friends.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's incredible. And it's just so cool to see the, like, you know, I think that's what I love about the story of coffee and the connections that you have is you get to actually get a glimpse into what it truly takes to create some of the best coffees in the world. And not just on the producer side, but then on the importing, the roasting, and then the actual, you know, pulling shots of it. And like the level of expertise and excellence that goes into it is, it's just a testament to kind of what specialty coffee is. What are some partnerships and kind of things that you're most passionate about kind of in the future for Onyx, and what are you guys getting really excited about? Are you branching into anything? What are some things you're looking forward to?
I love this. I only think 2 weeks ahead.
Okay.
And John is like 20 years ahead looking back or something like that. So it's a funny question to ask me, but, I don't know. You know, one of the things I'm super excited about is the next kind of wave of hospitality that I'm hoping is going to happen in the States post-COVID or wherever we are now. I mean, I feel like there has been such an incredible separation of human to human, both physically due to COVID and then now just like based on, you know, all of the crazy things happening and people's like belief structures and this like very... this really high feeling of separateness and also the thought of people being unwilling to bond over similarities, but to allow like small differences to really separate us as a society. I am like just so hopeful that hospitality will be the thing that helps us recognize that the things that we share are so much larger and more important than the things that we are different on. I'm just really hoping that that does some real work amongst just everybody in the coffee community, and also like just across the board, across the state. So, I mean, that's just something I'm hoping for. I don't know what we do in that space other than just like try to be as kind as we can to people coming in to our spaces. But I hear people, our area in Northwest Arkansas is a place that folks come and visit quite a bit these days. We have some like amazing art facilities. There's just like a lot of people in and out of this area. And I hear this a lot from people like, oh, the coffee shops in the place where I live, you know, there's warmth and there's not a lot of hospitality happening. And, you know, I hear that a lot from, and then I travel quite a bit too, and I also have that experience. And, I mean, I think part of it is like the kind of the service industry and the coffee industry's like reaction to the burden that was placed on these teams during COVID, both by the people on the other side of the counter and also on the like businesses, like, you know, and just the things that were necessary to keep the service industry going during that time. So I don't even think it's like it's never like the barista's fault, but I'm just hoping that that can grow and that we can not just reclaim like where we were, but that we can like push into a new level of that.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I think I just spoke with Eric, who's one of the owners of Sweet Bloom, and he's largely focused on like hospitality and their kind of retail side of things. And he had mentioned that like they treat their hospitality like they would if someone were coming into his house, and just that kind of relationship and connection. I was like, man, that's such a beautiful image of what hospitality can and should be like. And I think unfortunately in any kind of very special segment of an industry, which is specialty coffee, really, there can be that kind of like off-putting or kind of divisiveness that comes with that. And I think there's a lot of people in the industry that are, and I'm super happy for just pushing against that. And like, hey, how can we connect with anyone wherever they're at in life or in coffee and be truly hospitable to them so that we can connect them to what is so amazing about coffee and what is so amazing to the people in coffee. I think the coffee community is so welcoming and inviting and just open. And so I love that. And I just hope that that translates to people that aren't in our industry that are kind of coming into it. So, it's a beautiful space. So, well, Andrea, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? Any pieces of advice? I know you've got a meeting coming up, but.
Yeah, I do. There's a couple of things, but first, just thanks for having me on, and thanks everybody for taking time to listen to this. And I hope you found encouragement or, you know, or something like that. But yeah, I just want to encourage folks out there that are looking to grow their businesses or to grow in the industry themselves to really, first of all, just like embrace hospitality, like as a modality, both to your customers and also to your team, most importantly. I think that what you see in the industry flows out from the people that are leading in various businesses or in various like spots of the industry, like all of that kind of stuff. Those of you out there that are leaders in whatever space you're in, so I encourage you to like think about the people on your team or the people you're serving day to day, and just like how can you help connect them with the overall like beautiful nature of specialty coffee. I think the second thing is that if you're like a roaster or a small cafe out there and you're like really wanting to, you know, grow, and especially Tyler earlier, you mentioned this like newer roasters trying to pay money to farmers and, you know, to participate in this idea that we have, which is just like that the producer is really the person in the industry that, that often is left with the smallest piece of the pie. That if you want to participate in changing that dynamic, to ask questions of people you buy coffee from. So if you're a coffee consumer, ask questions of your roaster. If you're a roaster, ask questions of your importer, exporter. I really am firmly advocating that you should be able to get your questions answered about pricing, where it came from, about what quality it's at, And I'm not advocating necessarily that everybody like just be on full on publishing and like, you know, I mean, I think that would be great. I don't think everybody has to follow the same script when it comes to that kind of thing. But people ask me all the time, hey, I want to make coffee at home. Where should I buy coffee? And I'm like, hey, go to wherever you want to buy coffee from and ask questions. And if they are willing to and can at least partially answer some of your questions, then try it. And if they can't, then don't. And so that includes going to the grocery store and picking up a bag of whatever. And you look at that roaster. Can you ask those people questions? If you can't, I say go to the next coffee, because I think that willingness to share, you know, what are they doing with the money that you're giving them, all the way back down the supply chain, is like super important. And I think that doing that is going to be a really great way that an individual consumer or a smaller roaster or a large roaster, like that we can like contribute to this concept. So, just the willingness to ask questions. And then if you're a business owner or a roaster, the willingness to answer those questions, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's great advice. I have one follow-up question if you have the time. What would be your biggest advice for someone who's a business owner or a roaster who wants to scale their business with quality? What would be your piece of advice of like, hey, if you're looking to grow, if you're looking to scale to a larger level or open a new cafe, what piece of advice would you give them, or something you've maybe learned the hard way of make sure these things are in place?
Find people that are better than you and put them in charge of things. So for us, when we had two cafes and we scaled to three, I was like, oh, I'll just be the manager of all three cafes. And you know what? They were all three managed worse than they ever had been, because I couldn't possibly actually manage all three at the same time. So I finally started hiring managers. And you know what? Those people did a really great job because they were in one space, focused. They became much better managers than I ever had been. Same thing with roasting and green buying. John used to do all of that. And after a while, it was like we ended up with a roaster that was like better than John would have ever been. And then a green buyer better than John would have ever been. So it's like finding these people that are like talented and committed to the industry and are like willing to put in their time and putting them in charge and letting them actually like grow and lead those things, I think is super valuable. Because anytime you start expanding your bandwidth as the big leader at the top, not big, but you know, the leader, it's smaller and smaller and smaller. And so, you know, things suffer as a result of that. And so I think just like finding great people and helping empower them to do a great job is a really good idea.
That's amazing. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for your time and coming on the show. I truly appreciate it. And I'm super excited for what Onyx Coffee Labs is bringing to the industry and everything that you're doing. So appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I loved chatting with you. Super fun, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.